Hi, everyone. Lisa Guthrie with Canadian Cattlemen here, and I'm here again with Kelly Sidorek talking about her December depth of field column, Never Split the Difference. Well, based on the book, Never Split the Difference. Kelly, what can we all learn from an FBI, former FBI negotiator when it comes to business and family business communications?
Well, I was so amused by this, Lisa, because at first it's like, whoa, this is a high-level other arena. But, you know, it really comes down to a lot of just basic good communication tactics. One of the interesting points was he first or earlier on uses the reference to the late-night DJ voice. You know, everyone, you have that voice in your head now that I've said that really low, slow, soothing type voice. And he said he's done research that shows that it actually shows down some of our neurons or brain activity to have people in a more calm place, which, of course, as you know, when conversations may get heated, that can be something that helps a lot. He also stresses trying to get people into a positive mindset. And he does that with some of his questions when he's in having conversations with people. So one example is, you know, what do you love about your job? And so that, you know, instead of people being in that, whoa, so many things are going wrong and I don't like about my job, to really try to stress the positive piece of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of reminds me of the whole idea of a gratitude practice, right?
Yeah. Which there's been more and more research all the time of the benefits of that, that really can help us to, and, you know, I'm not a neuroscientist, as everybody knows, but, you know, actually create some new pathways in our brain that are more positive, really.
Mm-hmm. Another thing he talks about, or that you wrote about in that column that he talks about, is the idea of venting. So why do people vent?
Well, one of the things, you know, we used to, or some schools of thought is that, you know, a contained venting is good because, you know, people are frustrated. They just need to blow off some steam, if you will. And again, that can, but as what Chris Voss says, is that you have to be careful with that because it can easily spiral out of control. It can also contribute to the actions called triangling, where you're always talking about the third person with another person. And that just kind of builds some negativity and is not a good dynamic at all. But he's saying really that the reason people are venting is because they're simply not feeling heard. And so I think we can all relate to that in our own operations and trying to consider more ways of slowing things down. We don't always need to be in a rush, and really getting people to express themselves so that they are feeling heard.
Right. I call them drama triangles. I don't know if that's the proper
word. Yes. Triangling is definitely the term that I used.
Yeah.
Or heard used, yes.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You also wrote a little bit about tactical empathy. So what is that?
So Voss suggests that to be empathic or empathetic, we can start some of our sentences as we're replaying what people have told us with the phrases, it sounds like, it seems like, or it looks like. These are some of the things that people have been experiencing. And just by putting those labeling phrases at the beginning of your sentences, then people, for one thing, they can have a chance to re-explain themselves. If what you're saying, it seems like this is what you're experiencing, if you're really off base, and people can say, no, that's not it at all. And so there can be a dialogue. And so I thought those were helpful phrases to actually practice tactical empathy.
Yeah. And that would encourage people to really listen to if they're going to have to rephrase what somebody is telling them, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, the other idea, too, of, you know, trying to not do the blaming thing. You know, sometimes when there's one finger, when you're pointing a finger at somebody, there might be three fingers pointing back. So recognizing that in the words we use, too.
Let's talk a little bit about loss aversion, because that's another issue that you covered in that call.
Yeah, this was interesting. He says that, you know, and I mean, I think there's lots of information out there that talks about the negative bias, but the idea that we're actually twice as concerned about losing something as we are gaining. So in this example, it was, we are twice as concerned about losing $5 as we are making $5. Mm-hmm. And thinking about how we can approach that in our own operations with risk aversion too. You know, in some of our previous conversations, something such as, you know, what's the risk of bloat with a high legume field versus, you know, the trade-off of losing an animal versus overall gain because of improved performance, contribution to soil health, you know. So really trying to weigh those, but being mindful that we're twice as concerned about losing something. And I'd never heard it put in that way, that it's double your concern for loss as gain.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to try and put a number on those things, but that intuitively makes sense to me. Even when you think of people, like the old saying, throwing good money after bad, or the sunk cost fallacy, where we keep investing time or money into something that becomes clear it's a lost cause, right? Yeah, but we don't want to lose what we've invested, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
great. All very interesting.
Yeah, people are interesting. Anything else to add?
No. That's great. Thanks, Lisa.
And thank you.